The Monologue.
Just because a bill is well-intentioned, and in some cases, just because a bill is supported by Republicans doesn't mean it's the right bill. I'm not talking about the nonsense that we're seeing with the legalization of mushrooms. I'm not talking about that nonsense. I'm talking about that kind of bill that you listen to and you say, okay, well, that is truly well-intentioned. For example, thanks to a woman's inspiring story, Senator Sherrod Brown, the Republican from Kennewick, who I hope will be on the show to talk this through, is pushing a bill that forces health insurance companies to cover MRIs. Mammograms are already covered. The more expensive MRI when screening for breast cancer is not, generally speaking, covered by health insurance companies. But Sherrod Brown heard the story from a woman from Kennewick, from her district, who was at a high risk for breast cancer. Her grandmother died from it. Her name is Alana Whitemarsh. And she goes in and the mammogram, I think she actually went through a mammogram, one other procedure, did not find the breast cancer. But when she went through with an MRI, they did. They caught it early and they saved her life. And it's all happening in the context of breast cancer being the most frequently diagnosed cancer among women in the state of Washington. It's the second leading cause of death. But obviously, if you catch it early, thanks to advances in treatment, it's not a death sentence. You will survive, or you can survive. And so that story that she told caught the attention of Sherrod Brown, who said, okay, I'm going to move this bill forward. It's a bill that's been in process for a while. Alana Whitemarsh actually spoke in favor of this bill at a committee hearing yesterday.
I was fortunate. My cancer was caught early, and the tumor they found was 0.4 millimeters, requiring no additional radiation or chemotherapy. I credit my early detection and intervention to the persistence of my physician and the MRI screening. This same MRI screening has been denied by my insurance plan, stating it is experimental. I've known dozens of women like myself who are at high risk and who have never had an MRI screening, because it's not covered by insurance. I had the financial means and the willingness to make an independent decision, but others are not in that situation. Breast cancer screening and treatment has come so far, and yet not all women have access to these advancements.
So Sherrod Brown wants to do something about that. Now, just to give you some context, in the cost, it's usually between $430-ish and $1,000 without insurance. So it's not cheap. It's not prohibitively expensive from an insurance company when they would end up covering it under certain circumstances. So this might be wise of an idea. It might be a popular idea. I'm not going to stand in the way of that. But there is an argument that can be made and questions that I think need to be answered on where this might end. Not because it's not a smart move for women to go and get screened, but because of the argument that's being used in order to justify this bill, that this could save a life. And even if it saves one life, it's going to be worth it. But lots of things can save lives. Lots of medical procedures and checkups and other things can save lives that aren't covered. So why not cover those either? What's the medical necessity here? The medical necessity of an MRI versus a mammogram. Which, no, they're not perfect. And you will run into cases like Elena's or Alana's. But it doesn't mean that that's the norm. That's the exception. How often are they wrong in order to justify this particular move? And again, maybe you've got all the data on your side. Okay. But what do we know about certain medical procedures? If you're not deemed at risk, a doctor might still say, okay, well, it's free to you. Better be safe than sorry. Let's go ahead and just have you go through with this. If a doctor says, no, you definitely don't need this based on my expertise as your doctor, a mammogram for you right now would be fine. And the patient insists and insists and insists. And they're at a hospital that ends up sending you those emails the second that you leave saying, how was your visit today? And they have to make sure that they maintain high marks, they might just say, okay, fine, let's just go ahead and I'll do it. It's covered by insurance. That's going to happen. And when that happens, it means they are spending the health insurance company more money that they otherwise would not have spent. So when you offer them for quote unquote free to the consumer, guess what? More doctors end up offering it. More people take it because it's free. But it's not really, because it raises the cost of healthcare across the board, health insurance across the board. We're all going to have to pay for it. And again, I'm not arguing that it is the wrong bill. I'm simply saying, where do you stop? Weight loss surgery isn't covered by insurance. That can protect someone from early death or severe illness that in the long term doesn't just save their lives, but saves them money, presumably. But that's not covered. Should it be? Why not have a bill that says that should be covered? Small things like acupuncture, for example, not covered. Now, I know people who've gone through acupuncture because they had severe back pain, and this was all that helped them. I could argue that putting them into an acupuncture program is better than giving them pain meds that they end up getting addicted to and then dying from due to an overdose because of how incredibly addictive they are. Should we cover that? Not all prescription drugs are covered. Why not? Some drugs are better than the others, but they are really expensive. Why don't you cover them more? Why don't we force that and save someone's life? Fertility treatment, on the other hand, that's not covered. That creates life. There's a societal benefit to that. Why isn't that covered? We do not cover everything, because at some point you do have to draw a line in the sand, because you still need to be able to operate as a business. I know everyone likes to just bash health insurance companies, and I have no problem doing that. But I also want to be fair to a point where you say, okay, there are some things that they're not able to just automatically cover. Even though in the moment when we're told, yeah, they're not going to cover that, we hate it because that means we have to pay more. But in the long term, over the long term of your health insurance, are you paying more or less not covering something? Now, to someone who says, well, that could have saved my life. Yeah, then to you, that's going to be different. But to patients who will never use an MRI for any sort of breast cancer screening, a little bit different. And so they look and say, okay, you can do a mammogram or an ultrasound. That's going to be enough. Is it perfect? No, not even close. Not even close. So I just think that people should think these things through, because if you were just to ask someone if this should be covered, everyone would say yes. Pretty much everyone would say yes. And again, that might be the right move. But I have a tendency to say, when everyone would say yes, that's the perfect reason to pause, step back, and think about it a little bit more deeply to make sure that we are all on the same page and we're doing this for the right reasons, for the same reasons that don't cause unintended consequences. Because I want to hear from someone who thinks this is a perfect idea, but then make a reasonable argument to me why weight loss surgery wouldn't be covered, even though it too can help save lives. And obviously, not everyone needs or wants weight loss surgery. So you're going to have significantly less of a demand to get that than you would for an MRI, at least for a breast cancer screening. What's the argument? And if you don't have one, that's okay, but you do have to get an answer to that. And it can't just be, well, you know, lots of women go through this and this is a very serious issue. Yeah, it is. Obesity is a very serious issue. Back pain is a very serious issue. We don't have to compete as to what is a very serious issue. I just want to know what the boundaries are, what the standard is, and whether or not we're telling a private organization that they have to offer you coverage, when we know that having to offer coverage means it raises, generally speaking, it raises the rates for everybody, unless it's something incredibly rare that they're forcing into that position. We're not there yet with an answer. So hopefully we'll have Senator Sherrod Brown on the show. She's been on multiple times, right? I think she's a friend of the show. Or if she's not, I pretended and no one's going to know. Although now that I said it, now everyone's going to be like, has she actually been on the show? I don't know. Now this.
The interview.
Well, my next guest says he wasn't allowed to see his father at St. Michael's Hospital in Silverdale. Why not? Well, he's unvaccinated. And he was greeted by this new policy via a sign. He says earlier this week, now there is going to be a protest and rally against the vaccine passport. Joining me on the line is Gary. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
So take me through exactly what happened and how you found out that you couldn't visit your father in the hospital.
Well, so my dad, he got the Pfizer booster shot about 3 weeks ago and had a massive adverse reaction to it. He got it on a Monday. The following Tuesday morning, he was on his bedroom floor unconscious with 102.6 temperature. So rushed him to the hospital. I spent the weekend there with him in ICU, got him back home eventually, and he still never fully recovered. We had to bring him back in a few days ago to have his heart went into atrial fibrillation. He had to have a cardioversion, and then they also found that he had a bad case of pneumonia. So anyways, I spent the day with him. The protocol for visitors was the same when I went in there a few days ago as it was a few weeks ago, and they just basically take your temperature and get your information, and then so I spent the day with them.
Presumably, by the way, you're wearing a mask at that time, right? They're having you wear a mask?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Right. So not an N95.
Yeah.
But anyways, so on the way, well, so back up a little bit, my sister had texted me and said, I got a friend that works in there. They said something about a new vaccine identification protocol that they're implementing. I'm like, well, I haven't heard nothing about it, but whatever. So on my way out that day, I noticed that sign, and I was just like, oh, my gosh. So anyways. So when
did the sign go up, just so we have the timeline correct?
So it would have been, I think, day before yesterday was
Sunday.
It was about 3 days ago. Or 3 days ago.
So over the weekend is when it happened.
And it went up. Yeah. And it was while I was in there. And so, but yeah, anyways, so called a few people and boom, we had a protest set up for yesterday, which would have been the day after we found out about this. And so we went out there and protested against all this stuff. And
so, Gary, did you go, just real quickly, if you could, did you go directly to protest, or did you at least have a conversation first with the hospital?
No, I didn't have any conversation. I just walked by the sign and saw that, and then backing up, my sister had said that somebody had notified her that that would be happening, and then my dad actually called me and said that he was told by a nurse that it was in effect, and so I didn't even really need to talk to anybody. So,
that's insane that they wouldn't even give you a heads up at that point. Someone in person, because obviously they knew that you were there visiting your father.
Right.
But I will say, Gary, it does still, to me at least, make sense to have a conversation with them and make the case, because maybe they're just not hearing.
Oh, I would absolutely love it.
Well, what's stopping you?
Well, you know, at this point, I don't have a good reason. So far, every time I've dealt with the medical staff, it's been very kind of one-way conversation. We have our protocols. This is what we're doing. You know, just do what you're told. So I've kind of gotten used to that. So
yeah,
I feel that we're better off probably just raising concern on a local level and letting people know that this is what's going on. So I can go on and on for hours about all the details of this stuff.
Oh, I bet you can.
But anyway,
especially when it hits you so personally, right? I mean, this is not just some, you know, random restaurant that you're not able to go into if you're not vaccinated, or at least you're not willing to show your vaccine card. This is a hospital in which you want to see your dad, who is obviously going through a medical issue. Just playing devil's advocate, that the hospital would likely say, we're doing this because we want to protect your father, who is in a state that if he were to get COVID as a result of exposure to you, who's unvaccinated, who gets COVID, it could be bad for him. So what would your response be to that?
Well, my response has been the same. It's that this is the first time in history that people are getting blamed for the ineffectiveness of a medicine. Those people are the people that aren't taking it. So it's like, you know, the ineffectiveness of this medicine isn't my fault because I don't want to take it. So,
what is your dad saying?
You know, so. Okay. So my dad, he was against this from the start, but he, unfortunately has a TV in his living room. And so, he ended up getting the two shots, and then he went in for that booster shot. And I'm just like, and now he's finally he finally realizes what's going on. And so he's pretty upset. He's pretty upset. He knows it's all from this shot he got. And
is that what the doctor said?
I actually made the doctor say that, because when I first got there with him, I said, they were like, well, we did a COVID test on him. We did EKG. We did UTI test. We did all these tests and, CAT scan, chest x-rays, blah, blah, blah. And everything comes back as nothing wrong with him. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I stopped the ER doctor in midstream and I said, it's from the booster. And he's like, well, yeah, I guess we can't rule that out. And I'm like,
well, I mean, in fairness,
Woodstock the day before.
Yeah, no, I mean, in fairness, Gary, he does have. While I do think that there are a lot of doctors out there and healthcare professionals who are reluctant to, put any sort of negative sort of attachment to the vaccine or the booster, whatever it is, I certainly think there are a lot of people who are hesitant to say anything out of fear that it might stop people from getting the vaccine. While at the same time, he's also a doctor, and you're not, and so just. Using some, good faith here, it's possible he doesn't think that, right? And that it is, in fact, just a coincidence. Because while there have certainly been cases in which the vaccine has caused an adverse reaction, there's no doubt about that. But there are also cases in which people falsely have sort of made a connection that, while I understand, might not necessarily be the truth.
Yeah, there's actually specific criteria on the VAERS reporting system as to what would be considered an adverse reaction, and that definitely falls within it. So,
yeah, but the VAERS is not but just real quick, just because people talk about VAERS a lot, and I want to make sure people understand, VAERS is not proof that something actually occurred. It's meant to be sort of this blanket over any possibility, because they want to see if there's any trends that they're spotting that they could then investigate. It doesn't mean necessarily that it was caused by that, but they incur, and this is their own making, this is their own fault, right? I mean, they are encouraged to put all that info out.
Yeah, it's also for us, though. Us people that are not educated, and doctors and nurses, that to a place we can go, okay, what's going on with this stuff? And so, anyways, so, but yeah, it falls within that.
So what are you going to do at this point?
I'm going to keep fighting, man. I'm just a regular guy trying to navigate through this upside-down clown world, and fortunately my dad, even though he's all busted up now in the hospital, he's awake, and so we're just going to keep on fighting for medical freedom here.
Yeah, and I think on that that regard, I think you're right on. I think mandates are wrong. I think, and I don't know if this is the case at this particular hospital, and we've reached out to them to ask the question, but across the state, we've seen hospitals allowing COVID-positive, symptomatic staff members to work so long as they're taking precautions. And if they can take precautions, it feels like if there's consent to have a visitor in, that you also could take precautions, particularly if you're negative and you're not actually COVID positive. So it seems to me, if this rule exists beyond maybe this one part of the I don't know. I think the rule, as you say, exists is ludicrous. But in fairness, I've reached out to the hospital. We'll see what they end up saying, just because I want to know a little bit more from their perspective as to why they're doing this, and whether or not on record. Let's have them answer that question. Are they having staff members who are COVID positive? Let's find out what that answer is. And I'd be curious to see what they end up saying. I'll give you the last word. You got about 15 seconds.
Yeah, just appreciate the fact that you got a platform where you can speak the truth. And as of the last thing I heard, by the end of our rally yesterday, they had taken the sign down. So that I haven't confirmed that, but there you go. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Gary. And again, once we get some answers from St. Michael's Hospital in Silverdale, and maybe they can clarify if this is their policy, how it's all, like, I want to know. And, I want to hear from the other side as well. So, Gary, thank you so much for stopping by.
You betcha.
Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion. Jason, definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
My next guest said something pretty outrageous happened to her at the Children's Museum on JBLM. She was booted over expressing some concerns that an employee was forcing masks on children without parental consent. And just because she spoke up, she says she was threatened not just to leave, but she was threatened with arrest. Jillian Rasmussen joins me now to explain. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. I think this is going to be a great way to get my story out and kind of just let people see what actually is going on, even on our military bases.
Yeah, what you tell me was pretty outrageous. So tell me what you say happened to you. Give us sort of first the big picture view.
Yeah, so I'll just kind of go through just what happened. So I get there, and I've got my two small children. I've got a one-year-old and a three-year-old, and we go in, and there's like this water table. It's like a sensory exhibit for the kids. And so I'm seeing a bunch of small children, maybe 6, 7, 10, up to 10. They all have masks on, but they're down below their noses because the kids are playing in the water. Their hands are wet. So I watched this employee. She goes up to a mom and says, hey, your son, his mask isn't on his nose. You're going to have to leave. And the mom said, well, his hands are wet. You know, we'll fix it. We're getting to it. And so she did that to two other parents, and she walks away. And we're all just kind of looking at each other like, yeah, we're all thinking the same thing.
Yeah, it's like, but it's kind of ridiculous. We're talking about kids who are not being impacted by COVID unless, of course, they've got some significant underlying health condition.
Absolutely. And you also try to Google the numbers of how many kids are being affected by this COVID. It's really hard to find because it's not out there. It's not hurting children. And so she comes back, and she's got this box of surgical masks. And by this point, some of the parents had gone on, but I watched her approach these two young girls, and their moms weren't around. And she's got this box in their face saying, you need to put on this new mask. Your cloth mask is falling down. You're going to have to leave. And the kids were very uncomfortable. They were just looking at her like, you know, their eyes were all wide, and they were looking around for their mom. And their parents, you know, they were older, so that they left the kids there alone. So I pulled this young lady aside, probably the same age as me. We had a nice conversation. I said, hey, what you're doing is kind of out of line because their parents aren't around. I said, I think you might need to go through the parents instead of the children directly. I said, you know, you're kind of acting like a mask Nazi. I said, it's making some people mad.
Uh-oh.
And she, you know, agreed with me. Yeah, no. And looking back, I should have been more political with my words I used. So anyway, she says, this is my first day. I'm really uncomfortable. I don't like doing this. And I said, well, I'm so sorry that they put you up to that. And she walked away. And then 5 minutes later, she comes back with her boss, and he says, hey, you have to go because you called my employee a Nazi.
No.
And I said, yeah, yep. So we go back and forth, and he said, well, I'm going to call the military police if you don't leave. And I basically said, call them, you know, I'm going to try to salvage the rest of my time with my children.
Just
here.
Real quick, if you can, Jalen, you're there with your kids. You see some other kids. How old were the other kids that were approached?
So I would say probably 5, 6, 7, over 5, because the policy in the museum is 5 and older, you have to wear a mask. And all these kids had masks on. Let me remind you, they had masks on already, but they had slipped down below their noses.
Yeah, God forbid that happens with children. Where were the, how long were the parents gone for? Because obviously, you know, generally speaking, people don't leave their kids who are that young alone for very long, if at all.
Yeah, you know, and you know, it's possible some of their parents were around and they didn't say anything, but it was just very brief. You know, like, I've got my 1 year old, he runs off, so the parents weren't gone very long. You know, they were checking back in, but by this point I had already moved along with my children and we're at the finger painting area, and then the police show up and the employees like trying to show them which one I am. And so they come up to me and they say, you have to leave because they said you refused to put a mask on. And I'm like, this is the most bizarre thing in the world right now.
Which of course is not true, right? You were wearing a mask the entire time?
Absolutely. The entire time. I do, on base, it's a rule. And I do not even try to test it because they have heard stories. So That never was mentioned to me. The only thing that an employee said was, you called my employee a Nazi, so you have to go. So obviously that's not true. So far, they've just lied and got the police there.
And you mean military police?
The military police. They show up, two of them. And they're saying, you have to leave, even if they're lying about the mask. And I'm like, that just doesn't seem correct. Like, I said, they can just kick me out for no reason. And he said, yeah, even if it's not true, we still have to get you out of here. And I said, nope.
You just continued to stay with your kids for the next, 30 minutes or so?
Yeah, exactly. So I just basically had a police escort the entire time. They called for backup. The female cop actually had her handcuffs out and was asking where my husband was because they were going to arrest me. They said, well, somebody has to come get your kids because we're going to detain you.
How awkward was that as all of this was happening? Because you pretty much were going about your day with your kids at the museum. I imagine you were a little bit worried about what was happening, but you were trying your best to just kind of ignore them, right?
I was, and the worst part is my 3-year-old, he still talks about it, about the police trying to kick me out. That's what he says. And so I'm just trying to, be normal and play it down because my kids are there. And, this is really embarrassing, but I'm also not one. If I know I did nothing wrong, I'm going to stand my ground.
No, absolutely.
That's just how I was raised.
You very clearly didn't do anything wrong. I would not have said mass Nazi. I don't think Nazi comparisons, even when they're done very clearly in jest, I just generally think it's not the best move to make. But obviously, that kind of reaction calling military police on you is absolutely absurd. When did this happen, and what's been the conversation like between you and the museum or anyone at the base between then and now?
So this was last Saturday, so over a week ago, and so far, haven't heard anything from the people on the museum. And I do want to mention that the museum is owned by a private company.
Mm-hmm.
It's contracted through the base for the military families like me. So it's not affiliated with the base whatsoever. They had civilian employees working there. It's all civilian ran. So we actually sent up a complaint to the garrison commander on Joint Base Lewis McChord. Haven't heard anything back. They're supposed to be looking into the issue. I'm not going to stop here. I'm going to, request video footage and do whatever I need to do to figure out why these employees lied and had the cops called on me.
Well, let's say they acknowledge everything
right now.
Yeah, let's say everything that you say happened exactly as is. Just for the sake of argument, what do you want the consequence to be?
It's hard to say because I guess the only thing that would happen is some employees get fired, maybe, or they get...
Do you want that to happen?
A write-up. I don't think that I want that to happen. This is not ever going to happen. I would like the Children's Museum to be a safe place for children and for them to not have masks shoved in their face. And basically, I could go on and on about the kids and COVID, but I just would like an apology. I would like for them to say, we should not have called the cops on you with your 2 small children, and I don't want it to ever happen to anybody again. I guess that would be the best.
Yeah, it's absolutely absurd what you say happened. It's absolutely ludicrous. The kids are fine with the mask below their nose for 10 minutes. Nothing's going to happen as a result of that. It's just absolutely absurd how much fear-mongering there's. They're just pushing out there, and people buy it. I imagine the employee was just trying to do her job, but calling military police one step too far in my view. I will leave you with this. I appreciate you sharing your story. We'll reach out to the museum and see if they want to put on a spokesperson with us, because I'd love to hear their explanation as to what you said happened. So we'll find out what we can. Jillian Rasmussen, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
Obviously, the United States under Joe Biden's poor leadership seems to be headed towards some kind of military excursion into Russia or the Ukraine. We're getting involved in something that, for a lot of us, we're trying to figure out, okay, why? What is our strategic interest in the Ukraine? in stopping Putin here. Not to say that it's the right thing for Putin to do. He's a thug. He should be out of power. But what is the reason behind even the conversation about troops on the ground? Joining me on the line to help discuss and figure this all out is Congressman Pat Fallon. He is a Republican from Texas. He's also a member of the Armed Services Committee. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Jason, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
What is our strategic interest in having anything to do with the tensions between Russia and the Ukraine?
Well, I do think that, Jason, there are certainly some strategic interests, one of which is to keep Russia at bay. I mean, clearly Putin sees himself as the new 21st century czar for the former Soviet Union. He wants to expand Russia's borders. He wants, at least, if not in fact, but certainly in spirit, for instance, with Belarus. Mm-hmm. Belarus is technically an independent country, but it's really not. It's dominated by Russia, and that's what he'd like to see. The ship has sailed for him on Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, because they're NATO members. But with the Ukraine, he definitely sees that. The Ukraine is a country that is rich in natural resources, and he would like to grab some of that as well. They are increasingly becoming more aligned with the West and want to integrate into Europe. He does not want that. So we would like to see that happen. I mean, and also, just to be fair real quickly, in 2008, he did invade Georgia and mm-hmm. stole two provinces. In 2014, he took the Crimea from the Ukraine. Will this be his last territorial grab? Don't know. What will he do in Kazakhstan or some other former Soviet socialist republic? So I think there's definitely an interest there.
I mean, is the concern that he would spread
direct military involvement now?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess my question is there this expectation that he would spread even further? Would he go into Poland? Would he go into, you know, Hungary or Romania? I mean, is that the actual threat, or is this we just want to make sure that he's sort of isolated to where he is and we're willing to commit potentially troops on the ground?
No, I absolutely don't think that. I personally don't think that he is that any NATO country is at, well, certainly not everything. There's always a risk, right? But I think it's incredibly low risk because sure. Article 5 of the NATO treaty says an attack on one is an attack on all. So if he were to attack Lithuania, it's as if he was attacking Nebraska, and he doesn't want that. So I think the NATO countries are safe. That's primarily the main driver in those former Soviet satellites or republics joining NATO was because mm-hmm. specifically because they would have that protection.
Yeah.
The Ukraine doesn't have it. And that's, you know, he's a bully and he's a dictator. So they bullies always pick on the weakest gazelle, if you will, or the weakest and smallest and thinnest kid.
So I guess why would we want the Ukraine in NATO?
Well, we don't want it, and that's why.
Because obviously that's an issue. Sure. That's an issue that Putin is upset about, and that seems to be at least in part driving some of this. And I suppose, you know, once you become a NATO member, you're offered the protection that Russia would perhaps, I'm assuming, balk at, right? If Ukraine was a NATO country, this probably would be happening.
Right. And one of the reasons why, because we'll be fair, you know, I love your show because it's straight talk and it's beyond honesty. It's candid and frank. One of the reasons why Ukraine is not a member of NATO right now is it's still an incredibly corrupt country. They aren't the Jeffersonian democracies that you see in Western Europe and, quite frankly, developing in Eastern Europe as well. They don't have the independent judiciary. They don't have the rule of law. Mm-hmm. There's just a tremendous corruption, unfortunately, and they know that they need to get their act together. So it's a kind of a chicken and egg question. They'd love to become a part of NATO because they'd have the protection against Russia, and Russia doesn't want that. But what NATO, by the way, what country has NATO ever invaded? You know, we're not an aggressor. It is a defensive alliance. I know that, well, Putin, the problem with Putin is he's stuck in a 20th century Cold War mentality when we're well beyond that, but he doesn't see the world that way.
Sure. So I guess my question is, and I think this is a reasonable one that people are wondering, why is it the responsibility of the United States to send any troops there versus NATO member countries that are very clearly courting Ukraine, at least to a degree, and obviously just from a geographical perspective, they're closer, and from a geopolitical perspective, they're impacted more than the United States, at least in the short term.
Well, President Trump exposed that in the fact that NATO, a lot of our NATO allies, and I love NATO. I think it's worked fabulously well, but everybody has to carry the load, if you will. To an equal measure, and that the best way to do that is what are you spending on your military budget mm-hmm. per year GDP, and the President Trump had asked, I believe it was 2%, at least 2% would be spent, and the United States obviously were well beyond that. And some of the countries balked at that. But listen, if you want collective security, you have to be a willing partner.
Yeah.
And that goes for Taiwan as well. I mean, we're on the hook for Taiwan. I really want to make sure that there we add a deterrent so Taiwan isn't lost. But we have to ask the Taiwanese, you're not even at 2% GDP defense spending. I mean, if you're not willing to defend yourself, why should we?
Sure, and I think obviously that's a fair point, and obviously they're going to have to step up. But, I mean, in that case, I think one could reasonably argue that China is a much bigger threat to the United States than Russia is, and you would want to step up a little bit more in a situation like that. Do you disagree with that?
No, I wholeheartedly agree, Jason. Let's look at Russia and China in comparison. China has 11 times the population. Their economy is 11 times larger than Russia. Clearly, China is a greater threat. They're also manufacturing islands, man-made islands, and they're fortifying militarily, like right off the coast of the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their Belt and Road Initiative all over the world. There's talk now of them having a military base on the Atlantic coast of Africa, which is becoming perilously and dangerously close to violating the Monroe Doctrine. So, yeah, China's on the march. Russia is a relic. Russia is a nuclear relic, unfortunately. They have a lot of nuclear weapons. They were militarized under the Soviets. And so from an economic standpoint now, Russia's not a threat, you know, at all. What they should be doing, quite frankly, is integrating into Europe, and they should be well on their way to become an EU member. But they chose a different path
when
Putin seized power.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, when you have a dictator like Putin, obviously that's not going to happen. Do you think that President Trump would, at this point, advocate for troops on the ground or even putting them at state of military readiness? Okay, so what do you think the Biden administration, which I don't think any reasonable person would trust, but what do you think that they should be doing in this case?
Well, okay, we're at this point now. What I think we saw, let's just be fair again, is under the Trump administration for 4 years, there were no saber rattling from Putin. There were no territorial grabs. I suspect it was because, and I've talked to the president directly on some of this, I need to ask him this question the next time I visit with him. I suspect he back-channeled to Putin that he wasn't going to put up with it, and he would go, you know, all in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is called deterrence. Deterrence work, particularly when they're backed up. He meant business. Look what he did to Al-Qaeda. President Trump's administration obliterated Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And he took out Soleimani. He was a man of action. He was not messing about. And I think Putin knew that. What we saw with Obama in 14, the Crimea was gone and it worked. I mean, they stole it and we didn't do much. So now they're like, he's like the wolf or the bear. He's smelling an easy kill. And now they're just determining what the costs are going to be from an economic standpoint and also how quickly can they defeat the Ukraine.
There you go. We've been talking with Congressman Pat Fallon. He is a Republican from Texas. He's also a member of the Armed Services Committee. Thank you so much for spending some time as we sort of debate this. You know, it's important to have these conversations, and I really appreciate your willingness to do that.
No, thanks, Dave. It's always a very intellectual conversation, and I love the tough questions.
That's what we aim for. Thank you, Congressman.
God bless. Take care.
No time for the last rants. You've been listening to The Jason Rant Show.